Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Sensational, the Special Education Needs podcast brought to you by Wither Slack Group. Our podcast is all about celebrating neurodiversity, providing parents and carers with the knowledge you need to support and empower your child. My name is Laura, and I'm really pleased to be bringing you this episode entitled Nurturing Neurodivergent Pupils to Succeed. This episode is designed for professionals looking for strategies they can implement in their own classrooms. Now, to introduce our guest, I am delighted to be joined by one of our head teachers today, Lorraine Titchener from our Lavender Lodge School. Hi, Lorraine. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Laura.
Hiya. Can you please tell us a bit about yourself to get going?
Of course. Yeah. So I have been in education for 20 years, but I've always worked with children. I won't give my age away. And I worked in mainstream schools as a SENCO, and then I worked in special education, which I absolutely loved, really enjoyed it, enjoyed working with the children and finding out all about them. And so that's what brought me here to Lavender Lodge and with the Slack Group. And I've been here for 7 years and absolutely love what I do.
Lovely. Firstly, can we start talking about your school, Lavender Lodge, that you just mentioned? Can you share some examples of strategies or initiatives that you've implemented in your school to support neurodivergent students?
Yeah, so we have here at Lavender Lodge, we have 65 pupils. All of our pupils have a diagnosis of being autistic. They all have an education healthcare plan, and they're divided into groups of 6 to 8 children in each class. So we do have a fabulous opportunity to be able to have a really bespoke curriculum. So you would rarely see 2 or 3 more or more children doing the same kind of activities. They obviously do the same subjects, but they'd be doing them in a very different way. So we are able to individualize programs for children for what they need. We also run clubs in the afternoons, which sounds like lots of fun, which it is. But it's also cross-curricular learning, and the clubs were born out of the school council and what the children wanted. So it's not just us sitting together as a senior leadership team coming up with random clubs. It is about children's special interests, things that children would like to explore, such things like playing chess, learning about dinosaurs, having a science club, having a girls club and things like that. So they do get that opportunity to generalise their skills in that way.
Oh, I really love hearing about those bespoke curriculums and the pupil voice that the children, you know, they get to give their opinions and thoughts from the school council point of view, like we just heard about the clubs that they want to do. So it really does sound like you've got that lovely inclusive environment. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about how you foster that inclusive environment and help the students to feel supported and valued?
Yep. So we have quite very often, and they're embedded into the curriculum and planned in advance, we have what we call our drop down days or enrichment days, which can be about anything. We recently had one about saving the ocean and making sure the ocean is nice and clean. Mm-hmm. So we had lots of activities around fishing plastic out of the water and talking about how we can manage that in the wider world. Mm-hmm. We also celebrate all of the various festivals. So we are a diverse school here at Lavender Lodge. We are based in Mitcham in Surrey. So we have a diverse community. So we make sure that children learn and partake in all the different activities. We recently did Holi, we've done Diwali, so all those sorts of things. And we also have the senior leaders all have an open door policy. So I've got a little sofa in my office and often find a young person sitting there chatting to me about what they've been doing and how we could improve the school and that's that kind of thing. So they do get to talk to us a lot.
Oh, lovely. So in your experience, what would you say are some of the common misconceptions about neurodivergence in education particularly, and how does your school address these misconceptions?
Yeah, so one of the things I've sort of thought about and talked about with my staff and other people is how being autistic is it's not something that you can see necessarily, And so we have to be really mindful of the needs of our children, and also that being autistic is very individual. I mean, I think a misconception can be that if you're autistic, you've got certain characteristics, which definitely is not the case, given our cohort of children and 65 very individual children. So that's something that we work really hard to make sure that, you know, children, staff, the community are very aware of the individuality of the children. And also that sometimes we've got a lot of children who are non-speaking, but for our children that can speak and are very fluent, that doesn't necessarily mean, because they're fluent in their talking, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're at the cognitive level that might kind of match their speaking voice, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they've got communication differences that perhaps aren't quite so obvious when you meet the child.
Yeah. So that's the kind of things we address in Lavender Lodge.
Great. So, and what role do teachers and staff play in recognising and accommodating the needs of the neurodivergent students?
So obviously their role is huge, and it's something we do every day. One of the biggest things we think about and talk about a lot in school is the children's communication needs. Because obviously if children can't communicate with us, or we can't communicate with them, or they can't access learning, then obviously that's a massive barrier for them and for us. And given that, 75% of our cohort are non-speaking, we do have to do a lot of work around making sure every single child can communicate effectively without any frustration, and for us to be able to understand and for them to be able to understand us. So we've developed a multimodal approach to communication, which basically means it isn't just one size fits all, and it wouldn't just be one thing that we do. So for example, children use Makaton signing. They might use a pod book, which is a symbol book, which they can navigate their way around to tell us what they need. Obviously some children are verbal, some children may use gestures, and some others might use objects of reference. So if they're hungry, they might bring you a plate to show you that they need some food, for example. But we wouldn't just offer one or the other. We encourage children to sort of explore all of that. So for example, we've got one young lady who uses Makaton very fluently and makes herself understood very well, but she will also use symbols and objects of reference to kind of support what she's already doing.
And I would imagine your teachers and staff are really well trained in order to kind of support all of those modalities of communication throughout the school.
Yeah, so our speech and language therapist supports us with Makaton training. We do that most Fridays, just quickly in a briefing. We have quite a lot of fun with that, making up sentences.
That's great.
Yeah, practicing in front of each other. And she also supports us with our the use of POD, which is, I'm trying to remember the actual pragmatic organisational something display. I can't remember what the other D is, but it's a system that's used in a lot of specialist schools.
Okay, and do you have any other support staff on your site? Do you have any other clinicians who support the children's needs, or anybody else who's kind of helping to give those children that holistic experience in school?
Yeah, we have. We also have occupational therapists. So occupational therapists will support children in the classroom in terms of, so thinking about, if you're in class and you're not comfortable, or maybe you're a bit fidgety, or you need something in your hand to fiddle with so then you can concentrate, those are the kind of things that the occupational OTs, let's say, to shorten that a bit, will tap into. So they will look at seating for children. So we've got wobbly chairs, we've got bean bags, chairs with arms and chairs that don't have arms, all sorts of different types of furniture dependent on the child. We've got fiddle toys, we've got little cushions that children sit on that sort of wiggle or have got little bumps on them, because that's a sensory That's something sensory that they're seeking, and then it just supports them to concentrate in class.
Fabulous.
They might also help them with any kind of needs they have over dinner, so over lunch, so any kind of cutlery they need, supporting them with cutting food and those types of things. Yeah, so we have those occupational therapists with us as well.
Yeah, as an occupational therapist by trade, I love hearing how you really understand the role and the role of the clinicians in your school alongside your teachers and support staff. But we're just moving away from that kind of functional skills support and the communication support, but in thinking about learning, how do you ensure that the individualised learning plans are effectively implemented for your pupils?
Yeah, so as I discussed a little bit earlier, we do have a bespoke curriculum, and we've actually quite recently spent a lot of time reviewing our curriculum and making sure we've got success steps to learning. So we want children to be successful, so we create the curriculum in that way. And there's different kind of there's obviously key stage one and key stage two and different levels to the curriculum depending on your age and your ability. So we want children to succeed, because we know that it might have been in the past, if a child has come maybe from a mainstream setting that hasn't worked out, or they're just feeling, you know, like low in confidence, we want children to have those steps for succession, because that's really important. We want them to succeed, but we also want to challenge them, so they, you know, they're here and we're getting their full potential. We are in that unique situation and that good situation where we have small class sizes, as I said, 6 to 8 children in each class.
Right.
So it's, you know, teachers are able to really tap into the learning. They're able to formally assess as they go along, and make sure that it's exactly what each of the children need. And as I said, and so they can access it as well, making sure that access is really, really tight and that they're getting what they need. So we're able to do that really effectively in this setting.
Do you ever get the opportunity to take some of that fabulous learning out into the community?
Yeah, we do. So we go on trips. So we do things. All the children go swimming, because we think it's really important that every child, it's a really amazing life skill, life skill, that children can swim. I was always terrified of water, so I'm very keen for that to be the case and for children to not feel that way and to have fun in the water, but also to, you know, be able to swim. So they do that. So that means that they, you know, they need to go on the minibus, they need to get themselves ready. All sort of good life skills, getting off the bus, might have to cross a little zebra crossing to go into the leisure centre, being out in the community, really good life skills. But we also do things more locally. So the children will go to the supermarket, might have a shopping list. Somebody might be sent off to get the sugar, somebody might be sent off to find the jam. And then they go and pay for it at the till. And, you know, they're collecting, might be collecting items for their cooking lesson or whatever it might be. So we find it's really, really important. I mean, when I was at school, most of the time I didn't know why I was doing some of the things I did. And if somebody had just taken my money math session out into the community, I would have obviously understood that, oh, I'm doing that because then when I'm older, I'll be able to use money successfully. So it's generalizing skills as well for them, which is really, really important.
Amazing, brilliant. You've already talked about success and how you can just hear it in your voice, how proud you are of the children and how you really want to show them that their steps to success and those huge small victories that we've talked about. How do you measure that success and progress of these students at Lavender Lodge?
So as you would imagine, we do have an assessment program which we use, which is B squared. So the teachers will look at that every half term and note down successes and where the children have achieved their goals. And that also measures, as we talked about earlier, not just academic ability, but also any life skills, dressing, undressing, eating. It covers all of that as well. But one of the big things we've recently started to use is something called Tapestry, which is a platform that parents can also access. It's obviously secure, but what I find very powerful is that on there we can upload videos and photos of the children at school, because obviously parents don't get to see that very often, you know, but, and then if the children go home, they might not want to talk about what they did at school, they just might not want to. So I think that's been a really powerful tool, not just for us to be able to note where children have had great successes and looked and felt very proud of themselves, but also that we can show that to the parents, and then they can actually comment on that as well. So that's been a really powerful tool for us to use in terms of assessing what children have learned and what they can do and the direction they're going in. So that's been really successful.
Absolutely. And I am a parent of an autistic child, and I think that it's such a heartwarming moment, and I've been tearful in front of teachers many times when they do recognize what other parents or other teachers might just consider very small successes. And I think if I'd have been given a video or a photograph of that I mean, I might, my head might have popped at that, and that just sounds beautiful. You know, to be able to share that success with the parents on that level, it sounds lovely.
And I mean, even you know in the morning, quite often the staff are sitting there wading through these videos because they want, you know, obviously they've seen it, but I know what I understand what they mean, because I've got one young man who couldn't go up the stairs by himself initially when he was first here. He needed support to go up the stairs, and I think he was a bit frightened. But yesterday I saw him just bounding up the stairs. Wow. But even though I've seen that in real life, I'd have loved to have sat down and watched that again on a video, to be honest, because it was such a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it is that we've talked about before, those huge small victories, really powerful to kind of record that. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so thinking about your school, can you discuss any partnerships or collaborations that you've had with any organisations or specialists?
One of our biggest strengths here, and there's other things I'll talk about in a minute, is that we do collaborate with our two mainstream schools that are nearby. So we're next door, literally, to a huge mainstream school, and then we've got another school across the road. The school across the road, we do something called an inclusion group. So we take a group of children that are, again, the therapists support us to work out the children that might benefit the most from that, because obviously we can't take everybody over there. And they spend an afternoon with mainstream children. They play games, and they might do some simple cooking, like icing biscuits and things like that. And they just get to have that opportunity to spend some time with children in a mainstream school. So that's, we love that. That's wonderful. And they always get a big buzz out of that. And I think for the children in the mainstream school, it's as important for them as it is for our guys as well. Again, it's building that awareness. And then in the school next door, we've done sports day with them. I mean, part of that is because we're so jealous of how much space they've got. Oh. we haven't got as much space.
Oh, no.
As them, so we haven't. We have to be very creative with our spaces, but that's all right.
That's we okay. That. I'm sure you are.
Yeah, we are very, very. So we have done a sports day with them, and we've used their early years playground, which is very big and amazing. Ours is very small and amazing, so that's okay. And then we do a lot of work at the local library. They often have little shows on, so we go down there and work with them. And I'm just chatting to somebody in Merton about bringing a music specialist into the school as well, because our children love music. We literally sing all day, and music is used for transitions and all sorts of different things.
I don't mind about your small playground. I want to come to Lavender Lodge now.
You don't mind?
Yeah.
Something else we've just been talking about is starting a siblings group as well. It's not so much an organizational thing. It would be something that we did, because we recognize that for some of our children's brothers and sisters, this can be quite a tough gig for them. Maybe if their brother or sister's getting all the attention, or, you know, there's a lot to manage at home. So that's something we're looking into as well.
Oh, fabulous. Well, you have to let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Looking ahead, what do you envision as the future for education for neurodivergent students at your school? And what do you do within your setting to prepare the students for their next steps, such as secondary school, when they move on?
Well, envisaging the future for me is obviously around our own vision for the school, and that is that I would want all the children that come here, and this is, you know, part of our sort of tagline and what we talk about a lot, is that they have a life-changing love of learning. So perhaps if in a you know, before they were here, learning was a bit of a chore, or learning was scary, or it wasn't enjoyable, or it wasn't hitting the spot, we would want them to be here and love what they do. And it would, and, you know, and parents have often said to us, "You've changed my life because my child's so happy now."
What a powerful statement.
Yeah, it's great. And we want them to be confident and to be part of the community. But most importantly, we want them to be themselves. We don't want any child to feel like, I don't know, for example, I can't stim. You know how girls often mask and then they can't be what they want to be. But here we physically watch children walk in the door and their shoulders fall down and their chests come out.
Yeah,
that's the only way I can describe it. And that's what I would want for them, to just have that confidence. And then, yeah, we do an enormous amount of work on transition. We've got a whole kind of program, which we would, well, round about now, we will start talking to children about going to secondary school. They'll go and visit their secondary school. We have got a feeder school in Sutton, so we can work with them really closely, and they can go and visit as many times or as few times as they want to. They have an All About Me book that they take with them. The therapists support that hugely as well. We've also got a pastoral team here, which I haven't mentioned, who support, just going to say behaviour, because it's quite a broad word, isn't it? But that's, if there's any kind of challenge or barriers in terms of behaviour, they support with that. So they would be involved in the transition process as well. And then our window to start it is now, but if we feel children aren't ready and don't want to know about that for another few weeks, then we don't push that either. We have to do it at the time we think they're ready, and we also have parents involved in that as well.
But it sounds like with all those amazing teachers and support staff and clinicians and your pastoral team, that you're really very well prepared for those next steps at Lavender Lodge.
Yeah, definitely.
Fabulous. Oh, Lorraine, thank you so much for your time today. It's a really, really great session. Some amazing advice and support. And that brings our episode to an end. Like I said, a big thanks again to Lorraine for joining us, and for everyone who's listening. For more advice and support on special educational needs, head to our website, www.witherslackgroup.co.uk/resources. And to keep up to date with all our events and latest news, follow us on socials. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you can join us on the next episode of Sensational soon. Bye for now.